Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It. I'm Rebecca Ibarra, filling in for Allison Stewart. Now, a new feature film about the year 2008 and a family in upheaval amid the economic crisis. In the director's words, it's a film about, quote, maintaining love, destroying love, and then gluing love back together like a broken mirror. The movie's called Moving in 2008, and it follows the struggles of the LaManna family. The father, Anthony, is a construction worker on Long Island, and Vanessa, the mother, works in a hospital. When Anthony loses his job, the family's financial situation drives the parents to fight bitterly, and it drives Vanessa into a mental health crisis, all in the full view of their three kids. Sarah, the youngest, middle child Chase, who's cusping on adolescence, and Michael, who's looking out for the family as much as he can through his own illness. It's a story of a family going through hell, told thoughtfully by someone who's been there. Writer and director Calogero Carucci joins me now to talk about his debut feature film, Moving in 2008. It had its East Coast premiere last month at the Brooklyn Film Festival. Calogero, welcome to All of It.
Hey, what's going on? Good to have me. Appreciate it.
I've been told you also go by Cole. Is that right?
Cole, Calogero, either one.
Calogero. What do you want me to call you?
Well, you know what? If you're from Long Island, New York, and you've seen the movie A Bronx Tale, you might want to call me Calogero. Cole is easier. It's up to you.
I'll call you Calogero. So this is a story that comes very much from your own life. So before we get into the film, tell us what your life was like in 2008.
Yeah, 2008 is a crazy year. Tough for everybody. Really tough for me, tough for my family. At that point in time, I was in middle school. So I was 7th or 8th grade, and my family was struggling a hell of a lot. And it wasn't just my family, but it was the families around, you know, everywhere in the country, whether it was, you know, businesses going belly up or foreclosures, people losing their homes, losing family. It was tough. It was a really tough year. I remember it, the way that I like to think about it is like it's a scab that I almost keep picking at over and over. And for those who have heard me talk about it, I kind of sound like a broken record, but it's true. And it's just a very, very personal homegrown story that I think is quite relatable to a lot of people. And 2008 was just a hell of a year. And it's not really unlike, I think, what we've gone through over the past like year and a half, 2 years with COVID. I think that people are in a really tumultuous time and struggling, you know, not only financially, but with their health. And there's a lot of uncertainty and risk associated with that. And I think that moving in 2008 is quite applicable, not only toward those who lived through 2008, but for those who are moving and grooving now, which is sort of unfortunate that it's topical, but it is.
Yeah. So throughout the film, there's this recurring off-screen character, and that's former President Obama. And sometimes you hear his speeches, he's articulating messages of hope. Sometimes he's giving voice to the struggles of American families, you know, like the LaManna family. So how are you thinking about weaving those glimpses of politics into the story?
That's a good question. Well, I didn't really want it to be a political film. I think that, you know, one of my favorite directors, his name is John Cassavetes, and he used to say, maybe we can't agree on politics, but we can agree on senses and love. And I think that that is very much what the film is about. The political mumbo jumbo is sort of in the background, you know, sort of like how music would be in the background of a film, or how like in Raging Bull, the boxing ring is like another character in the film. I almost feel like Obama's voice or John McCain's voice, which you might hear faintly in and out, is like background music. And it just sets the tone, I think, that is required for the background of 2008. You know, I think growing up in 2008, I had no idea what was going on. I was a kid. I just understood that there was, I understood that something really, really important was happening and it was going to change the course of history. And so whenever I heard Obama's voice Whether you like him or don't like him, it doesn't matter. He was a huge part of 2008 and moving the country forward in a different direction thereafter. And so I wanted to weave his voice throughout the film in some capacity so you felt the gravity of his voice, which is really, really quite powerful.
Let's get into some of the production of this film, starting with casting, and particularly casting of the younger kids, because they really give some outstanding performances, you know, some really complicated performances. And before you cast them, what were you looking for in these young actors who auditioned for these roles?
Oh, man, I got to tell you, casting was that was a hell of a journey. It was really difficult. It was difficult because you're trying to find kids who can do something really, really big, but really subtly, you know. Oftentimes actors will train their entire lives for what I think is a decent part, like in Moving in 2008. And then when you have children who have little to no acting experience, you're really trusting them with the weight of the film. Mm-hmm. And you're just hoping that by going out on this limb, you can trust them and they can carry it. And they hit every home run that they needed to hit, in my opinion. The casting was difficult because I was literally looking all around the tri-state area trying to find young Italian-American kids who sort of understood the gravity of the situation. And for the older brother, I knew from the start, from the jump, that it was going to be played by my younger brother, Chase, mm-hmm. who plays the role of Michael LaManna in the film, the oldest brother. I gave him really no choice. I mean, I told him I was looking around and trying to find someone, but I'll tell you the truth. I knew from the very get-go that it was going to be my brother, and he would have had no choice otherwise. He would have faced the wrath of his older brother.
Was this because of casting, or did you write this thinking about him, with him in mind?
I certainly think that it was a mix of both, right? I mean, my brother is extremely talented, and it's unfortunate because he doesn't have the acting bug like a lot of people will have. But he's extremely talented. I mean, you want to ask him to sing, he'll sing. You want to ask him to dance, he'll dance. Act, he'll act. Play sports, he'll play sports. He's just all around talented. The other children, Luca Lombardi plays the role of Chase LaManna. And Luca is just an absolute stud. He's a star. And I am so grateful to have found Luca because he's such a beautiful, beautiful young man. And he made me, I think, so much better as a director, getting to know him, because he has something in the film that's, it's hard to quantify. And she's just so naturally talented. And then little Liv plays Sarah, the youngest little daughter. And whenever you needed to laugh, or you needed to get tears, she was so prepared and just so ready to go because everything was just on edge for her. She was just ready to go. And, the process was for casting Luca and Liv. It was a bit, I guess, more consistent with the way that independent films cast people, right, through backstage or through friends of friends. And I found them and I asked them to do these really crazy auditions for me. At the time, I was like 23 years old, running around New York City trying to cast kids and trying to get, you know, their parents to put trust in me, because that's difficult too, especially after telling them that I was going to film the film inside my parents' house on Long Island. And I was lucky that I found really great parents along with the kids at their side. So I was just very, very lucky. And a lot of life is about being at the right place at the right time. And a lot of it was timing.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Calogero Carucci about his new film, Moving in 2008. I'm Rebecca Ibarra, filling in for Allison Stewart. You're listening to All of It. Calogero, a little bit more into production. You filmed this in under 2 weeks. Am I getting that right?
We filmed it in about 13 days. Yeah. Filmed it in about 13 days over the course of the summer in 2019.
And what was that experience like?
Oh, it was brutal. It was brutal. It was really
You're like, duh, it was hard, Rebecca.
Rebecca, it was tough. I gotta tell you, I don't wish it upon my worst enemy. It was tough. I wasn't sleeping. You know, I was getting 3 to 5 hours max of sleep for the 3 months leading up to it. I did a lot of the planning largely like myself, which was difficult. And we, every day there was just something that seemingly was going to go wrong. Like we, like I said, we were filming inside my parents' house for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And at one point we had so many people using the restroom and the showers that you can imagine all the filth that goes down your toilet and down your drain ended up exploding in my parents' basement. And so we had a clogged cesspool for a couple of days, and that wasn't very fun. Shot at a salon and we blew out the electricity because our really, really awesome gaffers and grips wanted to do something pretty crazy with the lighting setup. And so we blew out the electricity in the salon that my mom was working at the time. So there was just, you know, it was full of challenges, but it was a lot of fun. It was just difficult, but extremely cathartic, because as a filmmaker, you know, you want to make something that helps you, I think, push through things or understand things that you don't quite understand. And it certainly did for me, and I think for those who are associated with the film.
So let's hear a little bit of the film. And this specific clip that I'm queuing up, it's actually the telling of a story within a story. And it's something that recurs in the film. This is the voice of Michael, the eldest son, telling the story of the Big Red Mountain to his siblings. Let's listen to it. Mm-hmm. It's coming up. We're actually queuing that up for a second. So this, before we listen to it, because they're queuing it up right this second, Kalajuro, so where did the story of a Big Red Mountain come from?
You know, I knew that I want, the thing is, the character that my brother plays, Michael, in the film is a very sacrificial character. And I think it comes from a combination of different tales that are in the Bible. And I look at his character almost like a sacrificial piece, almost as if like Jesus is a sacrifice. Hmm. You know, and I think that when you listen to the story that he tells in the film, the Big Red Mountain and the Little Green Mountain, the Little Green Mountain to me feels like the people, and the Big Red Mountain feels like the sort of Jesuit Jesus character who has to sacrifice himself for the sins of the greater good, which is the family. And that is really where it comes from.
We actually have it queued up finally. Let's have a listen.
Michael, please tell the story. Because you're the best at telling stories. Please.
All right, I'll tell it. So a long time ago, there was a Big Red Mountain who was very strong and loved to sit in the sun with his brother, the Little Green Mountain. But one night, there was a wicked storm. Psh, boom. There was fighting in the sky, and lightning hit the mountains. Boom, boom. But the Big Red Mountain was okay because he was big and strong. But the Little Green Mountain wasn't okay. By the time the storm had passed, the Little Green Mountain was beat up. Plants were fried, the rocks started to crumble. And then the next night when the storm came back,
Kalajuro, there's so many intimate moments of, you know, the siblings just talking to each other. How much of it was scripted and how much of it did they improvise?
Everything is scripted. Mm-hmm. Really nothing is improvised. I think everything was really scripted. I mean, improvisation is a funny word because when people think of improvisation, they think like off the cuff, just start rambling, trying mm-hmm. to figure out what they want to say on the spot. To me, I think it's more of like a rehearsed improvisation, if anything, if there is any. And when there was any of that, it was more so with the father character, so played by Noah Forrest, who is incredible, and maybe a little bit by the mother character, Lisa Tyrone King, also just an amazing, amazing talent. They would sometimes go on a riff, but not from things that were just out of space or out of thin air. It was usually things that we had talked about previously, but I would say like 95% of the film was scripted.
Yeah. So each member of the family is experiencing, you know, the shared crises, and they're experiencing their own personal crises. So Anthony, the father, he's also experiencing a crisis of masculinity. And we actually have a clip from the movie. This scene, Anthony is being let go, and this is how he reacts to being let go from his construction work. Here it is.
We gotta let you go.
No.
No, no, it's nothing personal, believe me. We just can't keep up.
Come on, man, please.
No, look, there's nothing I can do about it. This isn't coming from me. I like you. I think you work hard.
I bust my ass.
No, I know. I know you do. But I got a message from my boss, and Mickey says I gotta lay off 10 more people. We can't keep going the way things are going. The way the country's going.
I got 3 kids and a wife. My boy is sick. Let me talk to Mickey, please.
I can't do that.
Come on.
Look, Anthony, I'm sorry. I hate doing this. Really, I really do. Believe
me. Come on.
I'm really sorry.
Ravi! Listen to me. My boy is sick. And I need that paycheck to take care of my family. Because taking care of my family is my soul. Now you ripped that from me. And you ripped me from being a man.
I'm sorry. We'll send you the last paycheck by Wednesday.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, Anthony, about this character's relationship to masculinity.
Sure. Well, I think that growing up in an Italian-American environment, mm-hmm. you come from an environment that is very proud on the male side. And whenever your masculinity is maybe compromised or challenged, either by another male or by a female, whether it be a wife or a sister or a mother, there is usually a tension, a conflict. And I think it's just by way in which Italian Americans are brought up, particularly in New York. Hmm. And I think that Noah's character, Anthony Lamanna, struggles with that. When he's challenged and when his back is against the wall and stuff hits the fan and he has to come to a decision on how to take care of his family, maybe something that, you know, he really hasn't faced in his life because life hasn't prepared him for it, or maybe because life gave him a bad set of cards, it gets really difficult for him to, I think, put trust in himself first and foremost, because I think it's difficult to love others without loving yourself. And also in his wife. And I think that reflects in the strenuousness, if it's even a word, in how strenuous it is with his relationship with Vanessa.
How has being aware of, you know, this concept of masculinity, especially within the Italian American community, how has it changed the way you grow and behave and conduct yourself in the world?
You know what, Rebecca? I'm still trying to learn about it. I'm still trying mm-hmm. to figure it out day by day. I'm trying to figure it out because I feel like I wear a lot of how I grew up on my sleeve, not in a bad way, mm. right? I had a great childhood, albeit things were difficult. But, you know, as an Italian American, I think that you're so ingrained, that way of living is so ingrained within you, and then to automatically change, you know, on a flip of a dime overnight is really difficult. And so I think it's more so about understanding people's backgrounds and really understanding people as who we are as a people, as opposed to jumping to conclusions. And I think masculinity is, if you were to look up the definition of masculinity now, as opposed to what it was maybe a couple of years ago, it's probably changed and become very different and more fluid in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, cheers to that, better for that. But I think for me, it's certainly changed, you know, the way in which I see masculinity among the people around me. It's funny. It's mm-hmm. just funny. How life can really change you and really, I think, challenge one's masculinity as a male. It's very, very interesting.
And it also changes, you know, within the relationship of the brothers, right? Have you found that in your own life, that the way you relate to your brother as from boys to men has changed, has become, you know, a little more personal, a little more tender?
100%, right? Because there's something really interesting about a brotherly relationship that no other relationship can really give you. Mm-hmm. Not a father-daughter, not a mother-son, not a brother-sister. A brotherly relationship is really very special and intimate. And as you get older, I think it only grows more intimate if you let it. Because I see something of myself in both of my brothers, and I think that the reverse can be true as well. And it's, you almost grow as one in a weird way, because you can only, you share memories with them, and they understand you like nobody else can understand you.
Hmm.
And, so like movies like Rocco and His Brothers, if you've ever seen that, by Luchino Visconti, and, Mikey and Nikki, by the great Elaine May. Those are movies that were really inspiring to me, and like the brotherly relationship. And I'm just very grateful that I had the ability to find the right people to help me tell the story. And I hope it finds an avenue of distribution going forward. We've been lucky enough to, going on a tangent now, but we've been lucky enough to play at the Dead Center Film Festival, the Brooklyn Film Festival, which has been incredible because I had my whole family and everybody out here in New York to come and watch it. And we also played at CineQuest, so yeah.
And we're going to have to leave it there for time. My guest has been Calogero Carucci. We've been talking about his new film, Moving, in 2008, a very moving film. Calogero, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.